Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right. After, let's face it, I think you and I need to be honest with the audience about this.
Straight up, yes.
After repeated threats from middle management about the fate of the show, these are our play-by-play calls of the week.
Not day, week. We take you back to Friday night with the Shikellamy Braves.
So what do we do here, Kev?
Well, you get a yard. That's what you do. It is fourth and one from the five. Balestrini under center. Game on the line right here. Balestrini pitches to Manier. Manier with a stiff arm to the five, to the two, and one. Touchdown! Shikellamy!
Well, that's Nate Manier's second touchdown of the year, Kevin.
Balestrini under center. Handoff right side. Simco. Two-point conversion is good. And the Braves take the lead with a minute nine to go. Simco for two. Rhymes back to pass. Not much pressure. Sets up down the middle of the field. Intercepted. Intercepted. And it's the Mason Brubaker with the pick. And ladies and gentlemen, ball game.
Yeah, finally we had a nice, fun, exciting Friday night of football around here. Shikellamy, two touchdowns in the final 4-10 to come back and defeat Shamokin 21-20.
Well, I thought the Chiefs sounded great. All right, so, what?
Nothing. We're good.
Did I miss something?
No. You'll let us know if we did.
I mean, I thought the Chiefs sounded great.
Yeah.
I don't understand what the problem.
But it was nice having three tight, snug ball games going on at the very same time last Friday night with Shikellamy getting the come-from-behind win, Lewisburg Central going into overtime, and Central coming away with the field goal to get the win. And Seals Grove Danville, I mean, that was a four-point ball game for a good 8-9 minutes of the fourth quarter, and the Seals able to hang on there too.
I thought the Chiefs sounded great. Kevin did a great job.
He did.
He did a great job.
He told me afterwards, boy, I felt like I popped an artery.
Yeah. Kevin did a great job. I've got this memo here. I'm supposed to say it. Did I say it four times? So I'm supposed to say it four times.
Really? That many? Yeah. I didn't. Yeah, that memo was not for me. Does it say award winning in the memo?
Yes.
There you go.
And because you just said it, it kept me from having to say it.
Yeah, you're down to three. All right.
Make a progress. I just want to say I hate you people. I can't stand you people. I don't understand what the problem is. So those were our calls of the week. We'll try and get a hold of Will Tiemann here.
Yeah, I called the office, and they were saying that he is at Spartans basketball practice.
Oh, okay. So you won't be able to do the show then. Oh, okay. That's fine.
We'll get her rescheduled.
That's okay. I mean, because people try and get a hold of me. I had some oral surgery today, so I've got to... I couldn't go to men's basketball practice. I'll do that on... when am I going to do that? I'm going to do that on Thursday. I'll go over. There you go.
Well, you can't even tell. You're speaking you're speaking normally.
Oh, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine. Yeah. So what? We move to the next one. That's what I do. The next one.
On to the next one.
I have to. You have to. You have no choice. Yeah. No, so the World Series is tonight. So, all right. So what's your pick?
I'm going to take Houston in five.
That's what I'm going to take, Houston.
I would think Washington would get one somewhere. But if they really want to stay in this thing, they've got to at least split down in Houston.
I think Buhner's got Houston in five or six. You have Houston in five. I've got Houston in five. Elio's got Washington in seven. And the suit said the Braves are going to win in four. I mean, I get concerned. What about you?
A little clouded there. Yeah, a little cloudy, a little foggy.
A little?
Yes. I'm trying to go glass half full.
I'm telling you, it's the Braves' year. They're not in.
Well, it was for a while. Matt Catrillo says Astros in six.
Six.
He's got six.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So Matty Ice, the future voice of Shikellamy football, weighs in. Very nice. I think the starting pitching is great. I just think in the end, it's the bullpens that are going to do this. The bullpens will be the one that I think will determine. And that becomes the swing. And I still don't have a trust for the Nationals bullpen. I still don't. Even though I feel like I saw most of those guys last year when they were facing the spikes. Oh, my goodness. Every time you turn around, it's like, oh, another Nationals rehab guy. They had like five or six rehab guys last year. I mean, you see Victor Robles, who's starting in center field for the Nationals this year. He played six games at Medler Field, Lebrano Park last year. Thank goodness. So, yeah. That's it. And the great man himself, who is, of all things, has just blown off Tom Izzo, of all people, to be on this show. Now that is a friend. Will, how are you?
Well, Steve, I'm good. There's some sadness here in basketball land. It's weird. And you know this as well as anybody. You go from... Oh, man, number one preseason, first time ever in the country. Everybody's, you know, excited about that, even though it doesn't really mean much, but it's fun.
Yeah.
And then, you know, right on the heels of that.
You scrimmage Gonzaga. You scrimmage Gonzaga.
Yeah, and I don't think that went very well. But besides that, that's a different story. But, and then we find out Josh Langford, who's one of the nice people on the planet.
Yes.
He lost most of last season with a foot thing, and the hope was he could play November, December, be at full strength in January, and now he's just been shut down till January. So he's looking at missing a whole season, and that's really tough for one of just for a good guy.
Yeah, you know, sometimes this is difficult to explain, I think, sometimes to fans, because obviously they look at it from a fan's point of view, like, oh, Josh Langford, he can shoot, he can play, he can run the whole thing. But what happens is that you end up developing a personal side because you're around them enough, and you just feel badly for the guy and don't really think about the team.
Right. And with Josh, this is a true story. I've never heard anybody say this to me before. When he went down last December, nobody knew how bad it was or could be. And so we're having a shoot around before one of the games, you know, against somebody in December. But anyway, we're standing at the baseline, and I just said, Josh, I feel so bad for you. And, you know, some people have faith and they live it. He's one of those people.
Yeah.
He says, well, he said, God's got my back. I'm fine. Don't worry. And he made me feel better.
Right.
And so he's just... He has strong faith in our ops guy, David Thomas, said if this was going to happen to anybody, he's the best one because he's 21 years old and he might as well be 40. So
right.
It's something.
David Thomas, a good player in his own right when he played, too.
So, oh, yeah, pretty good. He was pretty good.
He was a pretty good ball player himself when he played. So if anybody can relate, it's David.
Yep.
All right, the football part of it. the defense got gashed, obviously, by Ohio State and by Wisconsin. But in reality, is part of the responsibility the defense being on the field too long because the offense has not been consistent enough? Is that fair?
Oh, Steve, that's more than fair. And I'm of the belief that, you know, when you guys go to Columbus, that's probably going to be the game. I know there's a title game after that, but I think that's going to be the game. And what we discovered with the defense at Michigan State is that, now keep in mind, after MSU, you know, played you guys last year when the rookie got hurt, in essence, that ended his season and Felton Davis' season, and in essence, the Michigan State season. So that defense played a lot of minutes after you last saw us live. And then they had about a bad five-minute stretch against Ohio State where MSU got outscored like 17-3, and that was ball game. But they're just out there way too long. And it's just, you could see something was off at the very beginning of the Wisconsin game. And you can't have a defense out there over 40 minutes a game. It's just not going to work. And then there's that other part where even D'Antonio talked about this. We all need something good to happen, just to spark us, a little bit of hope. And there's none of that. And I think it just took its toll.
It's interesting you bring that up, because I watched last night the defense against the Wisconsin offense. I'll be honest with you. I thought for a good chunk of what I was watching, the Michigan State defense, I thought, played them really well. I just thought in the second half they got tired.
Oh, yeah. And then it sounds funny, but you do have to score to win, right?
Yeah.
That's a little part of this game.
That's a prerequisite, yeah.
Yeah, it always helps. And when it was apparent that this offense was having one of its worst days in a long time, was just not going to score, I just think it snowballed. And I don't believe that Wisconsin is 38 points better than Michigan State, but on that day, they could have been 50 points better for all I know.
Was the timing of the bye week perfect considering the circumstances?
Yes. Steve, I think so. You know, in our little locker room show, we talked to Coach, and I asked our guys, just like one player, and that was Joe Bocci, the All-American linebacker, because he's a pretty grounded individual. He said something that was kind of wrong with me a little bit. He said, we just got to get away from the building for a few days. And I think that will help them. Who knows how it translates to Saturday? I mean, this sounds funny. I really thought Michigan State matched up great with Wisconsin. I really thought it was a wonderful matchup, power on power.
Right.
And I was looking for a tight game. And so now my confidence, Steve, is shaken. I don't know what to think anymore.
I want to ask you, though, about Joe Bocci. I watch him. He is a middle linebacker to me that would have been beautiful. He's terrific now, but he could have played in the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Yes.
When you've watched him, what has he meant to what they do? Because obviously he's the focal point. And then how does it translate to the rest of the team, his leadership?
Pretty interesting, that last part you just mentioned, his leadership. You know, he's one of those individuals who doesn't have to say a lot to anybody to get their attention. A look will do it. But there's nobody on that defense that will outwork him, probably outperform him, and care more than he does. And that's a contagious trio of elements, I think. And so I've often said, if you don't care who wins the game, you just want to watch somebody play football. Forget where the ball is. Just watch Joe Bocci play football. And I'm with you. You pick the decade, he's going to fit in there. And there's just something special about the way he goes about his business. And what's really interesting is when they come off the field, his conduct on the sideline, whether it's going good or bad, he's always like thinking about the next thing. He's always in motion. He's always looking at stuff. He's always ready for whatever's next. And sometimes we say players aren't engaged on a particular day or in a particular game.
Right.
Joe Bocci is always engaged, and he's always ready. And it's neat to get to watch him play. And like we talked about Josh Langford, well, Joe Bocci, he's kind of a a grounded individual as well. And right. And I joke with him. He's the kind of guy you hate. He's a great athlete. He's an All-American. He could be a model. He's got too many good things going. No one guy should have all that good stuff going. No, not right.
See, and the rest of us have always felt that about you. So
there you go.
We can kid each other all day. How has Brian Lewerke been, Will?
Well, this is gut check time for him, Steve. There's no question about it. He was awful, and he'd be the first to tell you. It was maybe, as a healthy player, probably the worst game he's played in Michigan State, period, when that game against Wisconsin. You know, it's easy to criticize play calls or coordinators. That's sometimes the easy cheap shot.
Sure.
But we get, you know, obviously from the press box, we get a nice advantage of seeing the plays unfold from up a little bit. And, you know, there's a lot of receivers running open and the ball doesn't get there and some awful throws. And so I think for him as an individual, and he's a prideful guy, why not? He's a competitor. He's going to have to really sort of, you know, just look within and say, okay, I'm much better than this. And it's about time. I think in his heart and soul he wants to show it. And the neat thing about, you know, you guys rolling into town, if he wants to see how he measures up against a great team, well, here's a shot. Because if we were to play Louisiana State Tech U or something, and he throws for 400 yards, who cares? How's he going to do against a top 10 team? And I think he cares as much as anybody.
Right. I understand that completely. There have been five players in the last 3 weeks that have entered the transfer portal for Michigan State. And let's start with this premise so everyone understands that all of them were passed out on the depth chart by somebody else. Right.
Right.
So, right. Do you think that led to Joe Bocci's comment about getting out of the facility for a little bit?
Could be. It could be, Steve. And it's interesting. A lot of programs lose players in the off season. This is coming in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
And only one of those people that have entered the portal, I was a little surprised on that, is Hayworth, because while he's not a speedy running back per se, he's a heck of a football player, there are spots for him on this MSU football team.
Agreed, yes.
But the rest of the players, you know, they weren't going to play.
Right.
And some of them just like being here, and they're getting a great education, and these are all good things. But at the end of the day, a couple of these guys who are on the portal, unless they're looking at a Division II school, I don't know where they're going to play. But the optics are not good. Your offense is struggling, and most of those guys play on the offensive side of the ball. So I know what it looks like. But at the end of the day, it may be a rallying call to say, look, you don't want to be here. That's okay, the voluntary thing you're doing. And so the guys who stay, maybe they'll get a little more resolve. I don't know. You just don't know unless you're in that side of that building every day and see what really goes on. But it looks a lot worse than it is. And who knows? Maybe it'll bring people together. But it won't affect anything that happens Saturday.
No, not in the least. There's just something to bring up because that's the new college football right there. Guys are redshirting after four games. Guys are entering the transfer portal. That's the new college football world. What's been your thought on seeing Penn State to this point, Will?
Well, me and you talked before the season started. And, folks, here's what Steve told me. I don't know how good these guys are going to be, but I've seen a lot of Penn State football. I've never seen a group this quick in my life. Am I close on that?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Well, you're right.
It's about time.
And so, you're on a roll today. But you take that speed, and now all of a sudden it's gelling. You can see it gel. You see it all the time.
Sure.
They're making plays. They're not like quick people, but they're becoming very efficient with that speed. The thing is, it strikes me about Penn State, you better play sound, because you guys just strike me as one of those teams that if you just off a little bit, boom, big play. Yeah. And knowing that the Michigan's that offense doesn't have a lot of big play potential, you got to keep the game tight, right? You got to keep it tight. So I don't know. I just really like the Penn State team, and I do believe, as I put out all my little pieces of paper, I would like it'd be hard for anybody to convince me as I look at what I know that's happened so far that the two best teams in this league aren't Ohio State and Michigan State. I mean, I'm Michigan State but Penn State.
Yeah. Well, I think
and I'm not saying that MSU can't win Saturday.
No, of course not.
I know.
Right.
At the moment.
I think I'm supposed to be with you Friday morning. So, I think.
Yes.
At 7:15 or something like that. So,
see,
that's fine.
Your deal's a lot better than our deal. It's like, I mean, this is normal for people. 7:15 is not normal, Steve. Okay. You know that.
Okay. What did I tell you when you took that thing? Go ahead. Tell them what I told you.
Okay. Get this. We all hear jokes about what's the old thing about when you buy a boat, right?
Oh, yeah. The greatest 2 days are when you buy a boat and you sell it.
Okay. So what I asked Steve about this morning thing, it's killing me. By 10 in the morning, I'm just walking in the walls. And he goes, well, you know, the happiest day of my life is when I quit doing mornings.
I said, for 21 years, Will, I said, I got up every day. And I said, I couldn't stand it. I said, good luck.
yeah. And so I'm getting better. I look like I'm not going to fall over. But it's just, I don't know how you get used to it, especially in my life. I'm kind of a late night guy.
Yeah.
This is not normal behavior.
Well, I'll be on to see if we can make it brighter and happier on Friday. And we can debate about the fact that, I'm going to see you close with Maryland. That's
yeah,
right.
We close with Maryland.
Yeah. And Penn State closes with Rutgers, and they should close with each other, and you and I both know that.
And you know what? And that's a big topic around here.
You darn right. I've tried to make it a big topic around here too.
And Coach D he's in the front of that conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're the Big Ten, think about how cool it would be. And I know the Michigan Ohio State thing's been a little lopsided, but it still has marquee value.
Sure.
So if you want to do that at noon, then follow that up with, you know, Michigan State and Penn State. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, now you're keeping the audience.
Oh, you own the day.
Yes.
Well, I think a lot of people can't wait to see Penn State play Rutgers. It's going to be
okay,
huge.
Well, I'll talk to you Friday. I'm sure they're just buying tickets and droves for Michigan State, Maryland. So it's like,
oh, man, get them quick before they're all gone.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, you've got everything the way I know I'm running over here. But, okay, you've got Michigan, Ohio State given.
Yep.
Penn State, Michigan State. The two newbies, Rutgers and Maryland, can play each other. You already got Indiana playing Purdue. The Friday game, Iowa and Nebraska. Wisconsin, Minnesota, Illinois, Northwestern. Okay, now what else do you want for your final weekend?
Nothing. Steve, it's common sense and it's flawless. It would be a great way to wrap up the regular season. And there's something there for everybody. And you know, even if your season's a little sideways, if you're playing a rival-type game,
yeah,
you want to end it. Oh, just, I mean, let's take Northwestern, Illinois.
Yeah.
If Northwestern can wrap up their season and beat Illinois, at least they did something.
Absolutely.
And Indiana, what if they need to beat Purdue to get the number 6? How cool would that be?
Yeah, exactly. I thought that Penn State-Michigan State game, which starting in 1993, I felt had really gained some legit traction.
Absolutely.
The only good thing is I get to be in East Lansing in October.
Well, and I feel the same way about Happy Valley. That's a really cold place in November. But you know that.
Well, that's what... years ago, I was doing football. It was Thanksgiving weekend. And it was, for whatever reason, Will, it was 60 degrees that day. And
are
I said
serious?
To somebody... Yeah. And I said to somebody in the press box, says, wow, this is the nicest day I've ever seen out here. And the guy started laughing. I said, you don't understand. I'm here in Thanksgiving and in February. And he looked at me and he said, this is the nicest day you've ever seen here.
He's right. I often wondered if we ever won in Happy Valley, would it not be as cold? And so when we finally won, and it was a meaningful win,
yeah,
it was still cold, Steve.
Yeah, no.
I just was happier, that's all.
Yeah, it's like, exactly right. Well, I will see you, my good friend, Saturday. I will talk to you Friday.
Okay, sounds good, Steve. Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Will Thiemann in East Lansing. Sean, I know we ran over, but I also know we have Jesse Doherty from the Washington Post in the final half hour in the World Series.
We're all good.
Yeah?
Good to go.
I know we ran over.
No worries.
Because I know someone in the back room has a stopwatch. And I know you know what my message to the person with the stopwatch is. Go sell something. All right, we'll come back.
Yeah. We're on a roll today.
We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Join News Radio 1070 WKOK on Twitter at WKOK 1070. It's your source for breaking local and national news. You'll get a tweet of each story on WKOK and a link to for more info from WKOK.com. And you can find out the guest list for the Dan Patrick Show and the Steve Jones Show. It's another way to keep you informed all day, every day. If you have a Twitter timeline, you need to follow News Radio 1070 WKOK on Twitter at WKOK 1070. Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. It's a true pleasure to have you with us today. Hope you have enjoyed the show so far with James Franklin's press conference and Will Thiemann from the Michigan State Network. Now it's time to lock in on the World Series. Game one tonight, what a pitching matchup. Mad Max. Max Scherzer on the mound tonight. Gerrit Cole for the Astros. And with that, we go to Houston. And joining us is Jesse Doherty from the Washington Post. Hello, Jesse. Welcome back.
Doing well, man. How are you?
Yeah, doing great. Thanks for asking. The starting pitching matchups in this series, to me, is what makes it intriguing. How does that fit into your view of it?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think from the side that I cover, the Nationals, you know, the heartbeat of their season is their starting pitching, and now they're running into the one team in baseball that can neutralize that. I mean, I think you look at two teams that have three pitchers on each side that could be the ace of almost any staff, and that's going to make for some really good, interesting baseball. And I think on the American League side, with the two games in Houston, it's obviously strategic and will be interesting. I think it gets even more interesting in D.C. when you have the, you know, pinch hitting spot coming up, and it's not as simple to manage those guys' workloads with the DH. But overall, starting pitching is certainly the cardinal storyline of this World Series.
All right, so let's get back to last year's World Series. In last year's World Series, Alex Cora used all five of his starters at one point or another in relief, including Chris Sale, who closed out the World Series with three straight strikeouts of the Dodgers, including Machado. Is Davey Martinez, I know he already used Strasburg in a game in relief against the Dodgers, is he inclined to use his starters at certain point out of the bullpen in this series?
Yeah, I mean, I think if he can, I think the difference there is that he's done it with all three of his main starters in Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin. The difference is that was in the, either in the wild card game or in the NLDS, which is a five-game series. It gets harder in the seven-game series because it's just more games and more innings to cover, and those guys need to be, you know, fully rested for their starts. So I think the guy we really could see out of the bullpen is Patrick Corbin in games one or two. And then beyond that, they're still sort of tinkering with where they're going to slot him in the rotation. And I think a lot of that's based on needing him to be available out of the bullpen. The Astros aren't loaded with lefties, but they do have Michael Brantley, Josh Reddick, Jordan Alvarez. So in late-game matchup situations, I think Corbin's logical. I don't know if we'll see a lot of Strasburg and Scherzer for full innings unless we get into the later series and they're on short rest. But early on, I think he really wants to line those guys up for their starts as best as he can.
Right. No, I understand that. How well, in your opinion, has Doolittle and Hudson done in relief at the end to maybe take the pressure off the idea of getting a couple of outs with a Scherzer later in the series?
Yeah, I mean, I think they've been great. I think there's even been cases where they've combined for nine outs and been able to cover, you know, three innings, which is, you know, unique for back of the bullpen guys like that. Hudson, of course, can go one plus. Doolittle even has gotten four outs in certain situations. So that's extremely valuable. And I think the Nationals' core strategy is to really avoid their middle relievers when they can, guys who have been pretty rough for a lot of this season. And, you know, when you look into the World Series, there's a rest day after game two, there's rest day after game five. I mean, those built-in rest days, the longest stretch you can go is 3 days in a row,
right,
which is, you know, 4 and 5 in D.C. So that built-in rest and the thought that, you know, only the offseason is coming up now, there's no baseball beyond this, I think those guys will be able to push themselves pretty hard.
How does Davey Martinez want to handle the DH the first two games?
I think it'll be Howie Kendrick, and then we'll see Asdrubal Cabrera starting at second base. He's a switch hitter. So, he flips to the left side against Garrett Cole and Justin Verlander. And Kendrick, who's, you know, a really good hitter, he's been great for the Nats this year, has also had some deficiencies on defense during the postseason. So you remove him from the field, give him fresh legs, because he's an older guy, 36, and has had some injury issues. I think that's the best case for them.
Well, you see, what's interesting about that, I've always felt that for National League teams going into an American League park, I've always felt that it wasn't that, hey, we're going to give a guy a bat. I always thought it was the chance to get the better defensive guy out there while still having the bat in the lineup.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think there's some things they're weighing right now. I mean, you could have played Matt Adams at DH. He's more of a all or nothing pop kind of guy, whereas Cabrera is probably a sound hitter and switch hitter. So, I mean, I think they definitely were weighing defense over just adding as much power as possible, because if you left Kendrick at second, and he's serviceable there. I mean, he's been solid in the past. And then you put Adams in, then you kind of give yourself a better chance to knock in big runs. But with Cabrera, maybe you get steadier at-bats and a little bit better defense. So there's a lot to weigh there. But I think that's the direction we'll see them going.
Well, you're talking to the choir here with Matt Adams. His parents live 20 miles from here. So,
right, Slippery Rock.
Slippery Rock, but he's actually a Phillipsburg Osceola high school grad, which is about 20 miles west of State College. So,
okay,
yeah,
cool.
In fact, Matt works out here in State College in the wintertime.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, no, that's so you're speaking to the choir, so we want to see him get some ABs in the World Series like he did in 2013. All right, so now let's take it to the flip side. I saw the Astros back in May, and Altuve was not yet back in the lineup. When you look at this lineup with him, because he had been hurt, when you look at this lineup with him back in there, what does that do to the balance of the lineup? What kind of challenge does that create for the Nationals pitchers?
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough. I mean, you have him, Michael Brantley, Carlos Correa, Alex Bregman, George Springer. I mean, it's really unending. Yuri Gurriel, like, they can beat you in so many different ways, and that's such good lineup depth. And I think Altuve, obviously, it does so much in that wherever he hits, usually two, and it's just he's the engine. And I think we saw that, obviously, with the home run off Chapman. He provided the big blow, but I think game to game, it's more about working long at-bats, getting on base a lot, working walks. He's just a really tough out, and makes contact and everything. This team's extremely hard to strike out. So Nationals pitchers, I mean, typically that's what they do. They, three of the top strikeout guys in baseball. So I think the clash of styles there is going to be really interesting to see.
Jesse, at one point this team was 12 games under .500 in May.
Yep.
And if you're 12 under in May, you're off to a bad start. What changed?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is, you know, practically, is they got healthy. For a lot of that 19 and 31 stretch to begin the year, I mean, there was a time when all of Juan Soto, Anthony Rendon, Trey Turner, and Ryan Zimmerman were out of the lineup. That's four starters. I mean, it's hard for any team to play well with down that much talent, and no one plans for that depth-wise. But at the same time, I mean, I think they got looser. I think there's a lot to be said about their clubhouse chemistry. I think there was some element of, you know, we can't really go anywhere but up now, so let's kind of just, you know, forget about what's going on and just play. And, you know, I think the thing that really helped was that they come off that sweep in New York when they got swept out of four games and the Marlins were waiting at home. And it kind of gave them a launch pad. I mean, they take 3 of 4, then they sweep the Braves, take 2 of 3 in Cincinnati. It kind of was a snowball where the schedule was soft, aside from that Atlanta series, and they used it. And, it you know, teams that are rolling over and not going to play well might have just, you know, split with the Marlins or even dropped 3 of 4. And I think that's when you would have seen Dave Martinez's job really get in jeopardy. But the fact that they won the games they were supposed to and then used that as a launch pad to go on what ended up being the best 80-game stretch in club history showed a lot about this team's character. I think health's the main thing, but at the same time, I think they did persevere to some extent.
Jesse, the one thing about the World Series, especially now it's going to be on over-the-air Fox, it gives everybody an opportunity to maybe learn more about some players that, while you and I know about them, maybe the casual fan across the country doesn't know. What will the casual fan find out about Anthony Rendon?
Oh, man. Super laid back. Definitely sticks to his own beliefs that there's a lot more important things going on in life than playing baseball. I think he's even joked, I'm not sure if it's a total joke, that he doesn't want to play for, you know, an 8-year contract, that he'd rather be, you know, with his family in his mid-30s rather than still playing. And I think while he views it as a job, I think he really does love baseball in the sense that he's a competitor. He likes being around the clubhouse. He's one thing people don't really know is he is a guy who's often staying around late and talking with his teammates at his locker just about the game or whatever it may be. And I don't know. He's extremely complex. I find him really interesting. We're going to obviously hear a lot about him because it's this game, this series starts in his hometown of Houston, and went to Rice University. So there's a lot of complexities to Anthony Rendon, and I think the one that matters most in the field is that he's a damn good baseball player, and we're going to probably see that right away.
You know, there's been a lot of talk about what Ronald Acuna has accomplished with Atlanta. Also some talk about how he didn't hustle out the one ball during the playoff, and then he had a terrific playoff after that. What is the country about to learn about Juan Soto?
Yeah, he's another guy that I think maybe unfairly gets pigeonholed to, you know, what you would quote unquote call antics. I mean, he has his stuff he does between pitches and during takes that I think is, you know, part intimidation, part rhythm. But I mean, he's an awesome baseball player as well, and I think that's what he should be known for nationally. And I think the stuff he does is fun, and it might get in pitchers' heads. And frankly, that would. He would like that. That's what he's doing it for. Yeah. But I think that, you know, overall, what people should know and what people will see is a really, really good baseball player at 20 years old. What he does at his age, and he'll turn 21 before Game 3. So no more sparkling cider if they win the World Series.
You know what? You know what I like about Soto? As I feel, he's shown everybody in the postseason he's a clutch player. He gets clutch hits.
For sure.
Clutch hits. All right. There's also that one guy that is the grandfather guy. He finally gets the opportunity, and that's Ryan Zimmerman. Okay, what's it been like for you to get to know Ryan Zimmerman over the years, and what do you think this moment now means to him?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really cool. I mean, he's been at every step of Washington baseball history. You know, he's the Nationals' first draft pick in 2005, debuts a couple months later, and then he's been with this team ever since. And for him to reach this moment at 35 years old and all the scrutiny he's undergone and with injuries and whatnot, I mean, I really think that, you know, when you talk about deserving it, I mean, I think nothing's really handed to guys. I think that a lot of players deserve it. But Ryan, it's top of the list of people that you kind of think that about, just because he's really stuck with it and persevered through a lot of injuries and really put together a really good second half and playoff run here. He's been a really integral bat in the middle of the order, and I think this team needs him to continue doing that. He's not just a mascot. You know, a lot of times you get to these stages and the 35-year-old who's been around forever is a cheerleader or kind of a symbol. He's still a very much an important baseball player to this run, and I think that's another thing that people are going to notice.
Obviously, the Capitals won the Stanley Cup a year and a half ago. But what has this run by the Nationals meant for the city and meant for the sport in Washington?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of suppressed, you know, excitement and enthusiasm with Washington baseball because, one, it left for decades, obviously. The last World Series was 1933 for the Senators. And then over the years, and from 2012 to 2018, I think fans just got really used to being disappointed. Nationals didn't win a home elimination game. They didn't win the playoff series. They were out in the NLDS every single time, despite having great regular seasons. And I think the expectation came that, you know, early October would come, a series would happen, and then people would be angry about this team. And so I think there's sort of a newfound trust in baseball, or October baseball, with between the city and this team now. And I think that's something that has really been beneficial for a town that does really love baseball but probably had a complicated relationship with it for a really long time, whether it would be losing the team or getting one back that was, you know, such a train wreck for a while, and then and then having one that couldn't really win the big game, which is a really frustrating way to be a fan. And I think all those sort of excitements and positivity has been restored by this run, regardless of what happens from here.
Yeah. All right. Finally, Nationals win. Why? Nationals lose. Why?
I mean, they win because their starting pitching continues to carry them.
Yeah.
The reason matter is that the Astros can neutralize it, but if they are getting 6-7 innings, they're going to have a chance to win, because I mean that would mean those guys are going well enough to pitch that deep into the game, and the bullpen is shortened to do what Owen Hudson, like we mentioned before. I think, and then by the same token, if they lose, if those starters get hit, and which could happen because this Astros lineup's really dynamic and beats you in so many ways. So I mean, I think that's simple, both sides of the coin. But the Nationals' identity is, you know, no secrets, built around, you know, their starting staff, and if that group does well, they'll have a chance. And if they don't, they really have no chance. The margin for error is really slim.
Yeah. Well, I think it's going to be a terrific series. Jesse, thanks so much. Appreciate your time very much, especially with Game 1 looming tonight.
Of course. Yep, anytime.
All right. Looking to close it out here on the show today. Just got a couple of minutes to go before we're all done, and on this show, there's a lot more said than done. Oh, sorry. It's the motto of the show.
That's true. I should probably put that on the title of the show on our Twitter timeline.
Okay. Just so you know, the motto of this show is there's a lot more said than done.
Yes.
It's just the nature of the show. Yeah.
Instead of sports talk where your voice counts, should we?
Yeah, where there's a lot more said than done.
All right.
Now look at the last hour and a half. James Franklin. All right, Will Thiemann from Michigan State, and Jesse Doherty in the World Series. Now, that sounds like a well-rounded show to me. Tomorrow, Neil Kulong. Then we'll dip into high school football on Thursday with our roundtable. And we'll also have the King on picks. We've got a lot cooking here.
We do.
You know, it's the last week of the regular season in high school football. And I know today is one of those dark, dank, dreary days. I've got that. I mean, every once in a while, you're going to get one of these. So, you know, I don't mind sacrificing one day a week so we can have six really great days. But I don't know about you. In driving, my grandson had a flag football game on Sunday. So I took a back road out to Oak Hall. Sean, it was as beautiful a drive as I've seen in a long time.
I'll tell you what. I take Interstate 80 every day from Lock Haven to the Route 15 exit. And my wife normally doesn't go in that direction. Well, we went RVing with her brother over the weekend on Saturday, and we drove toward Milton, and she just admired all the great trees and said, boy, this is beautiful out here. And I kind of stopped and said, you know, you take that for granted when you drive that same road every day, and it only stays that beautiful and colorful for like 2 or 3 weeks out of the year.
And what strikes me is that how vibrant the colors are. Like, I mean, deep reds, deep yellows, deep oranges. You know, it's not a lot of, you know, sometimes you'll have a fall where the color's dull. Not this fall. Wow, it's been spectacular. And, you know, we'll sacrifice today and get back to admiring it tomorrow. Hey, thanks for being with us today. Neil Kulong with us tomorrow. Our thanks to Will Thiemann and Jesse Doherty and James Franklin.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.